The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author. Episode 16, A Turning Point. There was a hissing of escaping air as the final seals on the helmet were released. A thick, pungent odour pervaded the room, sickly sweet, the smell of decaying meat. "Anybody likely to faint or throw up, do it away from the table, please," muttered Dr. Margaret Hindle from behind her surgical face mask. "It's a woman," gasped Grace, as the helmet was carefully lifted away. "Oh, Jesus," muttered James from over Grace's shoulder. The woman's face was purple, with sickly coloured bruises over her waxy yellow skin. Her neck was a mass of dark purple and yellow marks, and her eyes were half open. Her long hair cascaded over the table. Grace and James left before the medical staff began to remove the suit proper. The cadaver was rigid, and it looked as if it may be a long and messy job. "So, why leave it so long?" asked Grace as they walked at last in the fresh air of the ornamental gardens. "And what next? You can't keep a death a secret, can you?" James peered into the dying sun sinking over the treetops. "Orders," he muttered at last. "It's classified until we know what we are dealing with. Aubrey is taking over command here soon to assess the threat. I suppose he can deal with it." Grace looked at him in shock. "Don't worry," he smiled. "I'm still in charge of the labs. He will only run the Maunsworth House Centre. If we still have a facility at the end of the month, then you'll still have me to answer to." He laughed wearily. "How's that Detective Scott been treating you?" he asked gently. "Oh, you know," muttered Grace. "They still don't know what they're talking about. If we could just test the array and measure the resultant electromagnetic field, I'd feel a lot happier." "Are you starting to have doubts about the investigation?" asked James, turning his collar up against the chill wind. "Well, the more I think about it, the stranger it seems, really," muttered Grace. "What do you mean?" "Oh, it's just something I remember Thomas Sullivan saying when I first told him about the plane crash. He just seemed so adamant that it couldn't happen."
"And have you spoken to him about it since?"
He stopped and stared at her, a peculiar gleam in his eye.
Well, no, not really. I've never thought much about it till now, actually," said Grace. "I mean, all the evidence is there that we did cause it, isn't it? We just weren't prepared properly."
"Just talk to Thomas for me, would you, Grace?"
"Sure, I'll see him tomorrow," said Grace slowly, a look of suspicion in her eyes.
"Oh, Grace, why do you always come to me when you want to wheedle out some information?" laughed Commander James, as he and Grace sat sipping scotch in his office. "Am I that much of a pushover?"
"Of course," she grinned, swilling her drink around in the glass, listening to the clink of the ice. "Although I think Aubrey is a bad influence on you, you've become much too reticent in the past couple of weeks. So come on, spill the beans," she laughed.
"There's nothing much to tell that you don't know already," he sighed, squirming uncomfortably in his chair. "Aubrey thinks that Detective Scott is hopelessly out of his depth with the police investigation. I imagine he's been tying the poor fellow up in red tape."
"So he can halt the investigations," cut in Grace excitedly.
"You can't just wish them away, especially now that the media circus has got hold of it. But talk to him. He should be here any minute. It's out of my hands," he smiled.
"Oh, don't worry," laughed Grace, sipping her whiskey. I will.
A few minutes later, there was a light tap at the door, and in shuffled Aubrey Wilson, brushing snow from the arms of his coat. He smiled warmly upon seeing Grace, and cheerfully accepted a scotch from the commander whilst making himself comfortable by the electric fire. He looked like a mole, thought Grace, as he removed his spectacles and cleaned them on the end of his tie. She waited expectantly for him to speak. After a few pleasant asides about the snow, she could wait no longer.
"So, Aubrey, you wanted to talk about the police investigation," she cut in.
Aubrey regarded her with a patient smile, his eyes gleaming through his thick spectacles. He seemed to ponder every word before he replied, as if each were precious or dangerous.
"Yes, the investigation," he muttered, cheerfully accepting a top-up from James. "A very peculiar situation, I must admit."
"Peculiar?" echoed Grace. Wilson had a knack for engrossing everybody he spoke to, leaving them hanging on his every word. For such an unassuming man, he had an incredible presence.
Hmm? He muttered.
Yes, I must say, that Scott fellow is absolutely hopeless.
Grace laughed along with him. Too hopeless, said Aubrey, his tone suddenly becoming serious.
You have this Sullivan chap working on it still, he asked.
For what it's worth, do you think something is amiss? Asked Grace.
Just see what he can come up with, would you? Asked Aubrey. I would love to meet him. He sounds fascinating.
He paused a second as Grace shrugged.
I am concerned for his safety, though, he said at last. And for yours, Dr. Palmer.
Oh, I'm all right, laughed Grace. Colin's got his bloodhounds tracking me everywhere.
I think we need to reevaluate things a little, muttered Aubrey matter-of-factly.
Grace sat up, a look of suspicion spreading across her face.
Oh, don't worry, he laughed. I just think we need to get the project rolling again. It seems to have run out of steam a little.
That could be to do with the fact that we're not allowed to work, muttered Grace.
Can you overrule the investigation?
Oh, I don't think we need to do that, smiled Aubrey. Grace looked at him with a puzzled expression.
We're not allowed to do any work here, she said cautiously.
Exactly, beamed Aubrey.
So, we'll work elsewhere, Colin.
James looked up from his thoughts.
The facility we're setting up at Maundsworth House, he began slowly, trying to gauge Grace's reaction. We would like work to start there, studying the suit we recovered. Technically, it's separate from the police investigations.
And of course, they wouldn't need to know about it anyway, laughed Aubrey.
But, began Grace, still with a tone of suspicion,
we can't move everything over there. What do you mean? There's so much...
I want you to think of Maundsworth House Centre as an extension of the labs, Wilson cut in. Work linking the two facilities will be finished soon. We have the go-ahead for a lot of investment, research and development centres, even production facilities. We want you to have free rein studying that suit and getting them into production.
Your research, I'm sure, will benefit most...
Now wait a minute, snapped Grace angrily, standing up from her chair. If you're trying to create some bloody military research centre, or are you trying to tell me that some beneficial patron has a scientific interest?
Grace, said Colin quietly,
this facility has always been under military...
Oh, come on, Colin, she spat.
It hasn't been like that for years. I presume when you refer to the suit we recovered, you mean the gun as well. You don't need to patronise me.
I think we must all come to terms with a solution of compromise, muttered Aubrey in his calm and ruffled tone.
Please, Grace.
He motioned to her chair, and she sat back down with a sigh.
Now, I won't lie to you that we are concerned over the security of the field, but I assure you that your research will only be enhanced by the funding available. I don't see any reason to worry, Grace. Your studies are still our prime interest here.
I will not be party to the creation of a whole new bloody army, she said sternly.
And no one is asking you to, replied Aubrey.
But... if you want to go back into the field to carry on your studies, then we feel that you must have some sort of security backup. We have studied the gun that Burns took into the field during your rescue mission. It appears that it spontaneously failed upon contact with the atmosphere. The shell casings were corroded through in seconds. Now, we're assuming it will be the same for all conventional firearms, and that could account for the strange nature of that alien weapon we retrieved. We need some way to protect you, Grace, and at this present time we are powerless. We cannot have a repeat of the incidents of the last few weeks.
Grace sat silent in thought. She looked at James as if he had betrayed her.
Have a think about it, Grace, said Aubrey gently. I really don't think you need worry, though. This is a great opportunity to learn so much about the field and this new technology. Just imagine the extra resources available to you.
But at what price? Whispered Grace sadly.
Thomas tugged at his hair with his fists. This problem was driving him crazy. He had been working for 6 days flat out now, and had barely slept as what he thought would be a simple enough exercise transformed into an obsession. It had been Grace who had asked him to look into the electromagnetic spike affair. Ever since the first days of the police investigation, Thomas had felt an uneasy thought at the back of his mind. Something just didn't sit right. Popular interpretation of the effects of Standing Point was hazy about the creation of an EM field as part of the process. There hadn't really been any research into the matter. But Thomas's theories, the ones he had based his thesis upon, categorically disallowed their presence. If he couldn't prove that the fields were negated, then his thesis would need an entire re-evaluation. It was a matter of professional honour. At first, Thomas had been confident in his ability to disprove the evidence of the police reports. He assumed that the measuring equipment must be at fault, and with Grace and Detective Scott's approval, all the equipment had been dismantled and checked thoroughly. It had all turned out to be in perfect working order. This was the first surprise that Thomas had in store. Undeterred, he had worked out a set of test procedures based upon his theories. After 2 days of feverish work, he had gone down to the labs and run them on the array simulation software, confident of the results. He would be disappointed. Every time he ran a simulation, there it would be, a huge electromagnetic pulse identical to the day of the accident. It was driving him crazy. With everything he tried, the simulation would result in failure. He was beginning to doubt the entire framework he had based his theories upon. "Just slow it down a little," Grace had said after the sixth day. She looked worried. Thomas hadn't eaten or barely slept. He had worn the same clothes for the duration of his experiments and looked decidedly unkempt. "Slow down, how could he? It was all just crazy. It shouldn't be happening like this." Every night he would work through until morning, then run down to the simulation suite in time for the day shift's arrival, and each day he would get the wrong results. On the seventh day since starting his work, he fell asleep at his desk through sheer exhaustion. He woke with a stiff neck and a piece of paper stuck to his cheek. He was ready to give up and admit defeat. There was one more simulation he decided he would try, and then give in and start to re-evaluate the work he had placed so much faith in. Thomas looked at his watch. It read 3:30, 5 hours before the day shift would arrive. He cursed impatiently and looked over to his own battered computer, the one Sanders had brought with them from his accommodation at the university. He had the correct simulation software installed on the machine, but it would be incredibly slow in comparison to the lab's dedicated systems. Still, it was a simple idea he wanted to run the test on, and he didn't hold much faith in it working anyway. He could set the machine off running and go to bed. It would be finished by the time he woke up. He slept fitfully, his mind full of the possibilities of 4 years' work down the drain. He dragged himself out of bed at 8 and trudged off to the simulation suite to run the tests. He got halfway down the corridor before he realised he had already run the test on his own computer. He cursed morosely to himself and turned around, returning to his room. He rubbed his eyes sleepily, not quite believing the results at first. "I'm dreaming," he muttered to himself, a broad grin spreading over his face. There it was, right in front of him, the results he had longed for, a successful simulation of the array with no electromagnetic spike. He gave a high-pitched shriek of joy and ran off to tell Grace. An hour and a quarter later, they were stood excitedly in the simulation suite, waiting for the results of the same test, but run on the lab's computers. Thomas fiddled with his fountain pen, waiting expectantly. A lab technician tore the printout from the machine, and Grace grabbed it before he had a chance to read it. Her face fell from joy through to frustration. She cursed quietly to herself and handed Thomas the paper with a grim smile. "I'm sorry, Thomas," she muttered, walking silently out of the room. He looked at the printout in horror. There, as plain as day, was the ubiquitous energy spike.
"Colin, you've got to take a look at this," said Grace excitedly, pushing her way through the door of his quarters. "Am I meant to get any sleep at any time?" muttered Commander James. "Thomas, hello, I suppose you'd better come in too." He followed them both into his office, fumbling with the light switches. It was well after 2 in the morning. "Take a look at these, Colin," said Grace, her voice filled with nervous excitement as she thrust a handful of papers under James's nose. And what am I looking for precisely?" he asked, getting in a tangle with his reading glasses. "Those are the test results of the simulations we've been running," said Grace, pacing the room. Thomas, looking pale-faced and shaky, sat himself down in an armchair. "You see," she continued, "in every simulation we ran, the spike that supposedly crashed the plane has always appeared here." She pointed to a list of graphical readouts. "This is old news, isn't it?" muttered James. "Is there a punchline to all of this?" "Here," said Grace proudly, handing another bundle of papers. "They're all the same test, running identical simulations, but no spike." James peered at her over his spectacles. "Explain," he said slowly. "These simulations were all run on the lab's computers, and every time the test threw up a spike.
but the tests were all run on a different computer and gave completely different results.
So one of the computers is faulty? Asked James in confusion. Grace grinned.
Nor cooking the books, she said.
Thomas ran these simulations on his own computer, and there was no sign of a spike, she continued breathlessly.
At first we thought it might just be an error, but he's been up for 2 nights now, and everything seems to check out.
James glanced at Thomas. The young man was nodding in his chair. He looked exhausted.
So, muttered James, have you tried it on any other computers?
Well, that's just it, muttered Grace. We've run the simulations on practically all the lab computers.
And?
They all simulated a spike, she said, glancing at her feet for a second.
James sighed and held his hands up.
But, continued Grace, we need to try the tests on a totally isolated machine, one up here that as few people as possible have access to, and one which the base's systems will...
But Grace, sighed James wearily,
aren't you clutching at straws here? You've got plenty of isolated systems in the labs. If there's an error, then the chances of it being replicated on your other machines are...
But what if it's not an error?
Came a tired croak from where Thomas was slumped in his chair.
What if somebody or something is manipulating the data?
Something, whispered James in confusion.
Then what you're saying is
that somebody's setting us up, interrupted Grace.
Thomas is sure he isn't wrong on this one, and I need to believe him. She smiled desperately.
Well, mumbled James, if you give me the data, I'll make sure we run the simulation. I can give you the results in the morning.
He looked at Grace and then to Thomas with a wry smile on his lips.
You want me to do it tonight, don't you?
It's important, whispered Grace.
You're that sure? Colin asked.
Grace shrugged forlornly.
I have to be.
Okay, just tell them exactly what you've told me and everything will be fine, said James as he led Thomas down the long corridor, deep within one of the base's many buildings. He paused outside a door.
Nervous? He whispered with a grin.
Thomas nodded. He was pale and shaking.
Don't worry, you'll be fine, said James and led him through a door into a huge, imposing conference room with a great, dark, polished oval table dominating it.
Suited and uniformed figures were seated around it, all of them turning to stare as Thomas shuffled towards an empty seat. It had been a whirlwind couple of days for Sullivan. He had been shut away in Grace's office under constant guard, frantically attempting to collate all the information he gained, which suggested that the array couldn't have caused the crash of Flight 23, and that somebody was manipulating the evidence. Every computer simulation outside of the labs had yielded the same results. No electromagnetic spike. Now it was time to try and appeal for an opportunity to test the array for real and see what happened. The problem was that most of his argument was wrapped up in theory, and complex theory at that. He didn't know if he would be able to describe it to a room full of laypeople. But his searches had also picked something else up, which he felt sure could be real evidence. Cross-checking the faulty lab systems against clean ones, Thomas had found intriguing codes for several anomalous packets of information hidden deep within the systems. It was all encrypted and unreadable, but he was convinced it held some sort of virus which was modifying the data on the simulation software. If they could break the codes, Thomas felt it might give a clue as to who created, or at least planted it on the lab's computers. 2 hours later, he was sat on a low bench in the corridor, whilst Commander James and his superiors discussed their thoughts on the future. The door opened and Grace came out and sat down beside him, hunting her pockets for a cigarette. Well, that wasn't so bad, was it? She beamed, lighting her cigarette and taking a deep lungful of smoke.
You excelled yourself, Tom.
Thomas winced. He had thought it had been the most horrendous day of his life, being interrogated by so many high-ranking politicians and military types. The experience had terrified him.
Do you think they believed us? Stuttered Thomas quietly.
Oh, I don't see why not, smiled Grace airily.
They all seem pleasant enough.
Thomas wondered if they were talking about the same meeting.
Besides, she continued, Colin is in there now scaring them witless with tales of nasty people appearing out of thin air.
Once they realise they're all in direct danger themselves, I'm sure they'll want to help. At that point, the doors opened, and the room started to empty. All shook hands with Thomas and Grace as they left, and many looked grave and had been genuinely shocked by the revelations about the field which they had heard that day. The last guest to leave was a white-haired general, who was talking animatedly with Commander James. They stopped upon reaching Grace and Thomas.
Dr. Palmer, Mr. Sullivan, thank you for your words today, shocking though they were. It seems you are our front line for the unimaginable crisis we appear to be facing, and I can tell you that you have our full support. I know you won't let us down.
What was all that about? Muttered Grace to James after the old general had disappeared down the corridor.
They took your words seriously today, Grace. And you, Mr. Sullivan. I think we must thank you for finding us a way out of all this, said James, shaking the bemused man's hand.
So, we got the chance to test the array for real, to prove we didn't cause the crash? Asked Grace, hopefully.
Much more than that, said James slowly. Grace, they are talking about this whole new terrorist threat very seriously. Just imagine if these people from the field decided to attack the Prime Minister, or the Queen. I don't think we need to worry so much about the investigation now.
But they can't just make it go away, said Grace.
That is exactly what they can do, said James seriously. And they are very interested in those codes you discovered, Thomas. Some of the intelligence service people seemed genuinely shocked when you pulled that out of the bag. They went away looking very pale. I must talk to Aubrey about that one.
His voice tailed off and he went to start down the corridor, then stopped as if remembering something.
Oh yes, he added, with a wink towards Grace. And I don't think you'll need to worry about funding issues again. For a long while.
What do you mean? Asked Grace suspiciously.
They're talking about doubling last year's funding at the very least, said Colin with a grin.
Oh my, Colin, oh, I'm speechless. We can get back to work, she exclaimed.
Just a few details to iron out, but sooner the better by the sound of it, grinned James.
Grace hugged the big man in excitement, but somehow Thomas couldn't manage the same exuberance. He didn't trust the plans that the military appeared to have in mind for them.
All right, your attention please, everybody. Thank you.
Grace hushed the eager crowd gathered in the concourse. The entire Standing Point team was there, almost 200 people in all. The hubbub subsided. And Grace stood on a table near the fountain, smiled them all a warm welcome.
Thank you, everybody. I can't tell you how glad I am to be able to say these words, but, ladies and gentlemen, we can go back to work.
There was an astonished silence for a moment, then a huge cheer erupted from the crowd along with a couple of light-hearted boos. The police have removed us from their investigations, so we can all breathe a sigh of relief.
Now, that's the good news, so here comes the even better news. We have just received confirmation that funding has been extended for the next 3 years, at almost double what we anticipated.
Again there was a shocked silence, before another roar went around the hall.
Okay, okay, grinned Grace, calming everybody down. I just wanted to say a big thank you to every one of you. This is a great team and we've done some outstanding things in the past few weeks. And you've all put up with a lot, so give yourselves a big round of applause. Now, we're already planning a preliminary expedition scheduled for next Thursday. You'll all get your briefings in due course, but folks, it looks like we're back on track, so enjoy the party. We all deserve it.
There was another exuberant cheer.
By the way, called Grace, I'm overjoyed to announce that Gary Starling is fit enough to join us back on the team. He'll be starting work again in the next few days. I know you'll all be glad to see him back. If you could all just treat him gently. Try not to ask him about the events of the accident, but I know you'll all give him the respect he deserves. Anyway, enjoy yourselves.
She raised a glass of wine and there was a ripple of applause throughout the crowd. She went a step down from the table, but suddenly felt it rock as Jim Grayson, her acting head of control systems, clambered unsteadily up beside her.
Thank you, Grace, called Jim, addressing the crowd in his infectious, happy tone. Great news all round, I'm sure everyone would agree.
More cheers.
But there is one person, ladies and gentlemen, who Grace has not mentioned. A person without whose drive, determination and sheer bloody-mindedness this project would have ceased to exist a long time ago. Oh God, yes, Thomas, I forgot to thank him, muttered Grace, looking around for him. I speak, of course, continued Grayson, of our very own Dr. Grace Palmer, who has selflessly striven beyond the call of duty on so many occasions. Three cheers for Grace!
A deafening roar went up around the crowd. With the dumbstruck Grace in the middle, shaking her head in embarrassment. She raised her glass once again to all and gave Jim a hug,
then stepped down into the crowd. Everywhere around her, Grace's colleagues cheered and clapped. She drained her glass and made for the buffet, wiping her eyes as she went. Somewhere, somebody turned the music on. Grace was still dancing well into the small hours of the night.
You have been listening to The Heaven Field. For more information, downloads, and artwork, visit theheavenfield.com.